You're listening to Black Country Talking News, brought to you by the Beacon Centre. Unfortunately, due to the unprecedented impact of coronavirus, Talking News will not be distributed on CD until further notice. The health and safety of our staff, volunteers and listeners is our main priority. Therefore, we are sorry to inform you that we have taken the difficult decision not to distribute CDs to our loyal listeners until safe to do so. We're sorry for any inconvenience caused. We're pleased to inform you that the Talking News service is continuing, but as a digital online podcast. This will be available via our social media pages and website each week. Please note we cannot report on any community or sporting events due to the coronavirus pandemic. Thank you. We hope you enjoy this week's edition of Black Country Talking News.
Hello and welcome to this week's edition of the Black Country Talking News on the 15th of April 2020 with me, Steve, Christine, Pete, Mina, Ian, Helen and Simon. This week we'll have a roundup of local news, a recent interview on Black Country Radio with our Chief Executive Lisa Cowley and our Adult Social Hub and Volunteer Manager Becky Green, a short quiz we're calling Name the Year, sight loss news where we look at a free app for your mobile or tablet to help with sight loss, talking book review, a flashback section where we look at events from this week in history, the weather for the weekend and next week, and our and finally section where we'll reveal the answers to this week's quiz. But first, here's an update from Beacon with Helen.
Hello from everyone here at the Beacon Centre. We hope you are all keeping as well as you can given the circumstances. This week, we wanted to give you an update on some of the amazing work that has been carried out for Beacon. Each week, we've been naming our Beacon of Hope, someone or a group of people who have gone the extra mile to support the charity. This week, we've been highlighting the work of our amazing care team who support vulnerable people in Beacon Court, which is the independent living facility at the main Beacon site in Sedgley, and in our local community. Our team of 25 carers inspire us with their dedication, commitment and compassion. We are so proud of how they have gone above and beyond in the face of such challenging times. From working extra shifts, to covering night shifts, and even cancelling holidays to make sure they are there for the people who need us most. They are all superstars. As you may know, the coronavirus outbreak has had a massive impact on our charity and the emergency response we've needed to give. Despite this, our care team always have a smile on their faces. And now, with Beacon Court closed to visitors, they are making sure none of a Beacon family will face this uncertain and frightening time alone. In the last 2 weeks, our carers have worked over 1,870 hours and completed an astonishing 3,901 individual calls. Without them, Beacon would simply not be able to keep going. Ultimately, that's all we really want to do, as so many people depend on us. We hope to keep supporting and helping people in our local community, as we have always done for the past 145 years. But there is no getting away from the fact we are in crisis. We're losing around £25,000 every week after suspending our services and closing our retail shops. Your generosity over the last few weeks has given us hope. We are so grateful for any help you can give. Thank you so much. To find out more, visit www.beaconvision.org/urgent or email supporters@beaconvision.org.
Let's have a roundup of the local news now with Ian and Christine.
Here is the news for Wolverhampton. More than 100 litres of sanitiser have been produced by university chiefs in Wolverhampton to help frontline workers. Academics and technicians from the University of Wolverhampton have sped up the process amid a shortage. The antiviral cleaner will be distributed to the NHS, councils and other healthcare workers. A trial batch of sanitiser had already been produced before the lockdown by the university's School of Pharmacy and School of Engineering. It comes as the university has donated personal protective equipment, PPE, and has offered the use of its student accommodation at its Walsall campus for NHS staff. A total of 133 rooms for doctors, nurses and midwives are available, with NHS staff from New Cross Hospital offered use of the Liberty Heights accommodation, with police using rooms at the city campus.
More than £8 million has been paid out to businesses across Wolverhampton through a coronavirus support scheme. A total of 775 have received a slice of the government grant, with a further 1,225 waiting for the vital funding. Businesses in the city are subject to eligibility checks before the cash is handed over by Wolverhampton Council. And staff at the authority worked on Good Friday and Easter Monday to help speed up the process. The cash has come from the government's All Small Business Grant Fund and Retail Hospitality and Leisure Grant Fund. Once a payment is authorised, it will take up to 3 days to be received in business bank accounts. Wolverhampton Council's dedicated phone line to provide business support has already seen more than 1,500 calls made. Anyone with any business support queries should call 01902 290242 between 9 a.m. and 5 p.m. from Monday to Thursday, or from 9 a.m. to 4:30 on Friday.
Work is gathering pace on two new wards to help Wolverhampton's New Cross Hospital cope with coronavirus. Diggers are on the site of a former staff car park as work continues to rapidly create the wards, which are expected to be up and running next month. The extra wards have been sanctioned as part of the fight against COVID-19 and to allow the hospital to increase its bed numbers. Intensive care capacity has already been expanded, like at most other hospitals, to help provide urgent care for the most serious coronavirus cases. Such measures have generally enabled hospitals in the Black Country to cope with the increased pressures of COVID-19. The opening of the Nightingale Hospital at Birmingham's NEC should also lift some of the burden.
Wolves boss Nuno Espirito Santo, his players and coaching staff have made a six-figure donation to the Royal Wolverhampton NHS Trust. The donation will aid New Cross, West Park Hospital and Cannock Chase Hospital in the fight against coronavirus and help part fund and equip new wards being built at New Cross. All of Wolves' players also made a collective donation to the Players Together Fund for the NHS, and skipper Connor Cody said the squad were determined to show their gratitude, both locally and nationally. Since the outbreak, Wolves owners Fosun and the Wolves Foundation have been in regular contact with the Trust and Wolverhampton Council. And Professor Steve Field, chairman of the Royal Wolverhampton NHS Trust, added, "We are extremely grateful for this generous donation from the players of Wolverhampton Wanderers. It will help support our staff and patients during the pandemic and beyond. The money will go towards buying essential equipment for our new wards that are currently being built. This investment will make a huge difference to us and our patients. We are so grateful for all the support we have received from the community during this extremely difficult time."
Wolves owners have donated 4,000 protective masks to Wolverhampton Council in a bid to protect frontline workers in the city. Fosun International, in partnership with Beijing Heaven Pictures, handed over the personal protective equipment amid coronavirus. Wolverhampton Council leader Ian Brookfield said, "The donation from Fosun actually came before we put out our general appeal, and this is a sign of their commitment to our city. We are truly thankful for this kind donation, which will help to save lives. Fosun is the owner of Wolves, and the club is a massive part of the fabric of our city. This is yet another example of us all pulling together as one city. We still need more donations of PPE. We know that many local businesses have had to temporarily suspend or drastically reduce activities, and it may be that they have some PPE which they can spare, so I would urge them to please get in touch if they can support us in any way. The masks will be used by frontline social care workers in the city, allowing them to carry out their work safely. Wolves owner and Fosun founder and chairman, Guan Chang, said, "We are so grateful to the health and social care workers fighting to keep us safe. Fosun, the club and its business partners would like to stand with the people of Wolverhampton at this challenging time."
A school has created a unique tribute to key workers to help raise community spirits. The pupils and teachers of Oak Meadow Primary School in Ashmore Park, Wolverhampton, have created a giant rainbow with a collage effect from shiny paper and laminate. The rainbow, which is around 6 feet high, can be seen at the junction of Litchfield Road and Peacock Avenue near the school. Paul Lane, senior leader at the school, said the idea came from the staff and the pupils as they wanted to do something to recognise the outstanding NHS workers at New Cross and also for the community to show solidarity. "We are very privileged to have parents in our community who work at New Cross and for other emergency services, and we see it as a privilege to be able to look after those children at the moment. We wanted to do something really positive, and we tried to make it as big and bright as possible to be a beacon of hope for the community. It's just about spreading that message of positivity as far and wide as possible. The rainbow will be there as long as the community needs it to be there, as we see ourselves as the hub of the community."
Here is the news for Sandwell. A total of 1,000 COVID-19 emergency supplies parcels have now been packed by Sandwell Council. Councillor Danny Millard, Sandwell Council's deputy leader, helped to pack the 1,000th box. The council has been putting together vital food parcels to be delivered to some of the borough's most vulnerable people. More than 60 Sandwell Council staff have volunteered to work at the authority's food distribution hub and have been working hard on purchasing, packing and distributing food parcels for nearly 3 weeks. Diamond Boxes have donated the boxes and food stocks from Morrison's, Sips Education, Costa, Greggs, KFC, Panasar Foods and Ibis Hotels have all gone to make up the food parcels delivered to older and vulnerable people. The hard work of staff has also been recognised and rewarded by local companies, including Four Ways Bar and Grill, The Vine West Bromwich, Mr Singh's Pizza and Robinson's Bakery, with deliveries of meals and refreshments to keep them going. Businesses and residents in Sandwell can still join in to offer any assistance they can in a safe way and in line with government guidelines. For more information, visit www.sandwell.gov.uk/coronavirus-can-you-help.
Residents in Sandwell are being warned about suspected bogus callers after people posing as council workers were seen offering food parcels for payment. Sandwell Council has urged people to stay vigilant, with leaders saying genuine council officers would not ask for money. A spokesman for the authority said, "We've had reports of people pretending to be from Sandwell Council offering food parcels and asking for payment. Please don't be fooled. Genuine council officers will not ask for money now. Paying for anything the council helps you with during this time can be sorted out at a later date. Remember, if anyone turns up saying they are from the council and we haven't called you first and they don't have council identification, do not let them in. If the council is helping you at this time, our staff will not ask for payment. Do not hand over money to a stranger and never share your PIN number."
Special sensory equipment and light-up floor tiles are all on the shopping list for a school following a £10,000 donation from the well-known Richardson family business. The Meadows School in Dudley Road East, Oldbury, will also be able to invest in musical equipment for its forest school, as well as new kit for its sensory room and internal corridor signing, especially designed for children with limited vision. With more than 170 pupils, the Meadows is Sandwell's only special school, catering for secondary age youngsters aged from 9 to 19. The donation has come from the Richardson Brothers Foundation, the charitable arm of the Oldbury-based family business that has grown to become one of the UK's leading property developers behind the creation of the Merry Hill Shopping Centre. Founded by Roy Richardson and his late twin brother Don, the business is now run by Roy's three sons, Martin, Lee and Carl. Jackie Simpson from the foundation explained that the Meadows has a special place in the hearts of the Richardson family. The family business was originally based over the road from the Meadows site, and Don Richardson was very heavily involved in the school in its early days, sitting on the school board. The school opened in September 2003, and Don passed away just 4 years later in 2007. When a letter from the school came across our desk seeking funding, we contacted Roop Virk, the head teacher, and arranged to visit the Meadows to see what we could do. It was a real eye-opener, and we were hugely impressed by the school, the staff and the children. It really is the most wonderful place. We are absolutely delighted to be able to support its work.
Here is the news for Dudley. An emergency training centre has been set up at Dudley College to train hundreds of new 999 call handlers. It comes after West Midlands Ambulance Service launched a recruitment drive for 600 new operators amid the coronavirus outbreak. Recruits will be taught how to handle 999 and 111 calls at the college's Briley Hill construction campus. The state-of-the-art building, which has IT facilities, is located next to the ambulance service's headquarters at the Waterfront Business Park. Jeremy Brown, director at the trust which runs West Midlands Ambulance Service, said, "We are immensely grateful to our neighbours, Dudley College, for allowing us to utilise their building at Waterfront Business Park during a national emergency. With our own training academy already at capacity, our recruitment and training teams are using the additional space to assess and train hundreds of new call assessors to further bolster staffing levels in our 999 control room." College Principal Neil Thomas added, "We are proud to be playing our part and supporting our community during these difficult times, as the training of staff for these key roles is vital to us all."
Dudley Zoo and Castle has cancelled its upcoming cinema nights amid the ongoing coronavirus pandemic. The popular cinema nights were due to take place next month at the Black Country attraction. A screening of The Greatest Showman was due to take place on May 22nd, followed by Rocket Man and Downton Abbey on May 23rd and 24th. A spokesman for Dudley Zoo and Castle said, "Unfortunately, due to the current situation, we are cancelling the following cinema nights. For anyone who has purchased tickets for these events, refunds will be processed and ticket money will be refunded back to the purchaser in due course."
Two Black Country firms and a college have answered urgent NHS calls to manufacture visors for frontline doctors and nurses. Thomas Dudley Metallisation and Dudley College have teamed up to produce the face guards amid a shortage of personal protective equipment. Thomas Dudley, based on Birmingham New Road Dudley, has invented a new tool in order to mass produce the visors through plastic injection moulding and is aiming to make 20,000 a week to be distributed among Black Country hospitals alongside a number of care homes. The company will make the first 3,000 visors free of charge. After that, it will only charge the NHS to cover manufacturing costs and it won't be making a profit. Meanwhile, Metallisation, based on Peartree Lane, Dudley, and Dudley College, are producing a handful of face guards each day through 3D printing. Dudley College shared a blueprint for making the visors with Metallisation. Dudley College has also donated all of its supplies of personal protective equipment, such as face masks, overalls and gloves, to Russell's Hall Hospital. It has also donated hundreds of calculators to prescribing nurses amid a high demand for the equipment.
The Red House glass cone near Stourbridge was lit up blue and green as part of the weekly Clap for Carers movement. The visitor attraction in Wordsley was lit up at 8 p.m. on Thursday. The blue represents NHS workers, while the green is for social care staff, care providers, local government staff and those in the voluntary sector. It is hoped the lit-up visitor attraction will also remind people of the need to follow government advice on social distancing. Dudley Council House and Himley Hall are also being lit up in blue and green every evening until further notice.
Here is the news from our local football clubs. Albion legends have been making surprise phone calls to elderly fans in a bid to lift their spirits during the coronavirus outbreak. Iconic greats including Brendan Batson, Ali Robertson, Graham Williams, Joe Mayo, Daryl Burgess, Ray Wilson and Andy Johnson have all been calling season ticket holders over 70 to check they're okay. And this week, all-time record goalscorer Tony Brown will be joining in too, as many Baggies heroes look to raise a smile by taking fans on a trip down memory lane. The West Bromwich Albion Former Players Association has worked in conjunction with the club to contact season ticket holders, and Jeff Snape, secretary of the Former Players Association, said the calls have proven to be a massive hit. "The reaction we have had to the calls has been absolutely fantastic," he said. "Initially, the idea was to call supporters if they were celebrating a birthday. But it's been so enjoyable, we are now trying to contact as many as we can just to check people are okay." In total, Albion have around 1,600 supporters over 70, so we are now very busy. "But it's great to be able to lift spirits, and we'll keep going for as long as the lockdown goes on." It's funny, because when someone picks up the phone and they are told it's Brendan Batson on the other end, they just can't believe it. Brendan spoke to one man the other day who attended his first game in 1946. "It's great for them to be able to reminisce with a former player." Iconic centre-half Robertson made more than 500 appearances for the Baggies between 1969 and 1986, and he has enjoyed making the calls. He said, "It's funny because they all miss the same things as me, football and going to the pub. But they all say how nice it is to hear from us. The fear of the virus and lockdown means that it's a tough time for everybody, so it's really nice to be able to do something that is positive and helps cheer people up." Wolves and Villa are due to enter further talks over when the Premier League might be able to resume after the peak of the coronavirus pandemic. Representatives from both clubs will be joined by their top-flight counterparts in a conference call. Reports emerged yesterday over a potential return behind closed doors on the 6th of June for Albion, Walsall and the rest of the English Football League, but those suggestions are understood to be premature. Among the many options mooted for the Premier League as Chiefs aim to get the season completed is to play all the 92 remaining fixtures across neutral venues, with the Midlands seen as a possible destination to lessen the impact on the emergency services. It has also been said that Wembley and St George's Park have been offered by the FA, potentially staging up to 4 games a day as clubs look to get their terms concluded and in turn avoid any financial repercussions from TV companies. Wolves chairman Jeff Shee and Villa chief executive Christian Perslow are expected to be part of the conference call.
Thanks, Ian. Beacon's chief executive Lisa Cowley and adult social hub and volunteer manager Becky Green recently were interviewed on Black Country Radio about how coronavirus was affecting services. Let's have a listen to the interview. The presenter is Clive Payne.
I'm going to talk now to the Beacon Centre for the Blind in Wolverhampton. Now, they've been part of the Black Country for over 145 years, and their purpose of supporting people with sight loss to live fuller, more independent lives has never really wavered. They also provide care and support and hope for vulnerable people and those with long-term conditions in the region. Like most organisations, they've been significantly impacted by coronavirus. How are they meeting these additional challenges? Well, I'm joined on the line by the CEO, Lisa Cowley, and the Adult Social Hub and Volunteer Manager, Becky Green. Good afternoon, both.
Hi. Hello.
Lisa, thank you very much for joining me. Lisa, first of all, tell me about the routine services that the Beacon Centre provides, first of all.
So at the Beacon Centre, we aim to provide a bespoke service for people that are impacted by sight loss. So we design the provision around what people need. That might be residential provision in our independent living centre on the edge of Wolverhampton. That might be coming to one of our centres that provide a range of activities during the daytime. It might be part of our national winning bowling team that our sports team do. Or it might be about support to help you back into what we would refer to as everyday society. Mm-hmm. So when people are impacted by sight loss, it can be massively isolating, and lots of them experience both conscious and unconscious discrimination to them, where people think that they don't want to engage with them, don't want to give them a job, give them an opportunity, or actually they just think that they're not going to be able to do it. So we try to give them the tools and the confidence to do whatever they want to do, irrespective of their sight loss.
Sure. Now, coronavirus has impacted on your work significantly. Give me some examples of how that's happened.
So, obviously, as we're all aware, there is basically a lockdown across the country. So all of our activity centres have closed. So all of those hundreds of people that come and engage with us are not able to attend them. Also, hundreds of the people that we support have been told that they need to remain within their homes and shield for 12 weeks. They're obviously already extremely isolated and now they can't access services, access support, and in a number of cases can't have support from their family. Our residential centre here, we have 71 apartments that we run in conjunction with Bromford Housing, and that is now on lockdown. So that's just to protect all of those residents, so they can't have any family members visit them. Mm. So the small number of staff that are still here supporting them, so our absolutely amazing care team and my colleagues who've been here beside me day and night, I have spent many nights on a camp bed sleeping here, have been making sure that they've not only had the support and care they need, but they've had people around them that care for them and consider them part of their extended family and have given them that reassurance. So lots of the people that we support don't just have sight loss. They may have lots of other conditions. Some of them have dementia. Some of them have had strokes. Unfortunately, some of the people that we support are part of a palliative care scheme. Mm. So actually, these are potentially some of the final days, weeks or months of their life, and they're completely isolated. So one of the most important things I think we do is we give them hope. We give them hope that they aren't forgotten. We give them hope that people still care about them and love them and want to help them. And that comes not just from us that are potentially here, either physically with them or on the end of the telephone, but it comes from the stories that we share about the people that have been willing to support us, the messages we've had on social media, mm-hmm. the donations that we've had through the post, through text message, online, the offers of people to help volunteer. And that hope is probably one of the most important things that we can do for them.
Sure, it must be. I mean, now you mentioned that you're currently residing at the centre. What led you to do this?
So obviously, as a social, we provide social care, and actually we've got to focus on keeping people safe. So as many of us have experienced, we've had to have members of staff who've had to self-isolate, and that's meant that we've had to protect them. So we've been absolutely stringent in trying to keep people safe. So we've been frontline, myself and Becky, who's here with me, wouldn't normally be providing care to some of our residents, but actually when we had to step up to that challenge, we did. And equally, we're on call 24/7 for the people that we support here and in the community. Mm-hmm. And I wasn't prepared to leave my staff to do that on their own. So being here in the centre, it meant that I could be here any time that our residents needed us, the people we support in the community, and also our staff members. This is an extremely stressful time for everybody. Mm-hmm. But for those of us that don't have the option to stay home and protect our families, because we are in a role where we have to care for these vulnerable people, we are putting ourselves on the line, and actually that is a stressful thing to do.
It must be. And what effect has it had on your family life?
Pardon?
What effect has it had on your family life, the fact that you're living there and not with your family at home at the moment?
Well, they just basically don't see me. So, unfortunately, my father does have respiratory issues, so he's having to self-isolate. I'm very lucky that I live on a small holding. My mum and dad live in the main farmhouse, and me and my boyfriend live in a smaller house on the property. Mm-hmm. So I've been not going home generally for 7 to 10 days at a time. Had food parcels delivered here to keep me going, and my team has been amazing at providing me sweets. But mum and dad haven't seen me, my sister and her family haven't, and my poor boyfriend, unfortunately, has been running around looking after everybody.
Mm. So it has had a significant impact, really. But as you say, it's a case of having to under the circumstances that you're in. If I can turn to Becky now. Becky, you have responsibility for the Adult Social Hub. Tell me about that.
So we have hundreds of people come to us each week, coming into our centres, and we offer independent living skills, cooking, crafts. We have a gym. They do loads of different activities with us. And for them at the moment, they're isolated. They're at home. A lot of them are on their own. And so we're doing as much as we can in terms of putting in telephone befriending for them. We're sharing sort of virtual exercises for them to do. And we're just looking really at different ways of working. In order to keep in contact with everyone, and make sure that they've got enough support at home. We've been overwhelmed, really, at the amount of volunteer support that we've received. In the last 3 days alone, we've had 74 new volunteers come forward to
Gosh, that's brilliant.
Us. Yeah. So, you know, that's absolutely fantastic for us. We were able to provide more support to people out there with the help of all of our volunteers. And obviously, you know, without those volunteers, we wouldn't be able to do what we're currently doing at the moment.
Sure.
So that's absolutely fantastic. But there are obviously other ways people can support us in terms of sort of fundraising and things as well if they're not able to volunteer.
Yeah, I mean, are you looking for additional volunteers at the moment still?
Yeah, absolutely.
So if I wanted to volunteer, what kind of things would you expect of me?
At the moment, we're looking for telephone befriending volunteers and volunteers that are able to support with transport in terms of getting food parcels to people and delivering medication. So if you can drive, if you've got a driving license, if you're happy to spend 20 minutes on the phone to someone once a week, that is all we're looking for. So if anyone is interested in volunteering with us, all they would need to do is contact myself. So my name is Becky and my email address is bgreen@beaconvision.org.
Okay. How much time would that take up, you know, in a typical week? So if somebody's sitting there thinking, oh, I have got some time, you know, how many hours would that be a week, for example?
It can be really flexible. Whatever the time people have got to give us is great. So, you know, to be matched with one person for telephone befriending might be 20 minutes once a week. Or if people have got a few hours to give us, again, that's brilliant as well. So we're not fussy, and whatever people can give us is absolutely brilliant.
Sure. Well, that's the thing too. I mean, I've got your contact details here, so I'll give that a readout in a second. Now, obviously, you're feeling the financial pinch at the moment, like lots of organisations and charities, and I know you'd welcome some donations to help you continue with your work. How can people do this?
So we've got lots of different ways that people can donate. So people can donate by text. So they can donate £5 by texting Beacon Crisis, that's all one word, to 70085. We also know that lots of people are trying to keep active and do their once a day exercise. People can help us by signing up to the 10,000 mile challenge. So we're trying to get people to collectively move 10,000 miles in 2020. And you can sign up to that on our website. People can also just send us a donation. There's links on our website, or they can contact us via supportus@beaconvision.org. And we have been amazed by the generosity of the people that supported us. We had somebody who heard our story via Facebook and sent us a cheque for £250.
Wow.
One of our residents who lives here who donated £500 to us, which are absolutely amazing and have brought us, well, me and Beck, to tears because it makes such a difference.
And you can do a lot with that, can't you?
We can do a huge amount, and I think, again, it's like I said earlier, it's not just about the money, which is so desperately needed. It's also about the fact for us that are here, frontline, not seeing our family, not seeing our friends, supporting these people. It's reassurance that people do still care. And I think one of the loveliest stories we have is Cameron, who is a young man who's a piper boy, delivers pipers to our residents, has been a real beacon of hope. So he left a note saying that he was happy to get groceries or to help people. He then, through his school, donated Easter eggs to a number of our residents. And then when I saw him yesterday, he said that he'd shared our Facebook post, and members of his family and his friends had made cash donations to us. And I think the fact that a young man like that can take it upon himself to want to make a difference to these people is just so fantastic.
It is.
It's those stories that keep us going. I think in the news at the moment, there are so many terrible stories, and unfortunately, here at Beacon, we've lost members of our Beacon family, the people we support, and some of our volunteers already to this terrible disease. Mm-hmm. It's these good stories that we need to focus on, and the fact that we're not alone, and if we all pull together, we can make a positive difference for people.
And that is exactly the right sentiment to have, isn't it? That's really good to hear. Lisa Cowley, the CEO of Beacon Centre, and Becky Green, Adult Social Hub and Volunteer Manager. Thank you very much indeed for your time.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Thanks to Lisa and Becky and all of Black Country Radio for helping to support Beacon with that radio interview. Next up, we've got this week's quiz with Mina.
This week's quiz we're calling Name the Year from Events That Happened This Week in History. Here are a few questions on some of the items coming up later in this week's Black Country Talking News. Keep listening for the answers. Question 1. What year was the famous Apollo 13 mission when we first heard the words, "Houston, we've had a problem"? Question 2. In what year did Neil Kinnock resign as leader of the Labour Party? Question 3. In what year did the Titanic sink? Question 4. In what year did the Rolling Stones release their debut album? Question 5. What year did Grace Kelly marry Prince Rainier of Monaco? Question 6. In what year was the first ever episode of The Simpsons? If you missed them, we'll let you know all the answers in our And Finally section at the end of this week's edition.
Thanks, Mina. Our flashback section later will reveal the answers, so keep listening. Sight loss news now with details of a very useful app.
Hi, this is Matt Harrison, Beacon's Technology Innovations Manager. I wanted to talk to you today about one app that you might find quite useful at the moment, especially if you normally rely on some sighted support and you can't actually be with them at the moment due to the isolation restrictions. So the app works on both Apple and Android devices. So that's your smartphones and your tablets. And it's called Be My Eyes. Be My Eyes links you with a sighted volunteer somewhere else in the world who has signed up to help you perform tasks that otherwise you would find difficult to do by yourself. Be My Eyes uses your tablet or smartphone's camera, and basically you make a call using the app, which is free when you're on Wi-Fi, and basically it links you with someone and you ask them to help you with something that you can't do very well. So I've just made a call asking someone to tell me the use-by date on a yogurt in my fridge. So here's how the call went. Hi. Could you help me find out the use-by date on this yoghurt, please? Is that all right?
Yeah, of course. It's the 10th of April.
Awesome. That's tomorrow, isn't it? Brilliant stuff.
Yeah.
That's great. Thanks very much indeed.
No problem.
Thanks.
Bye.
Take care. Bye. As you can hear, the call was very short and it was quite simple, and the lady was very helpful and I got the information I needed. So you can download Be My Eyes from the Apple App Store or the Google Play Store. It's free and it's very simple to use. You register as a person with a visual impairment and it then just connects you with one of the hundreds of thousands of volunteers around the world who are giving their time freely to help us. You can use it for anything. You could be asking someone to identify what a tin is in your cupboard, or to check that you've got a matching pair of shoes on, or to help you find a particular marking on a dial on the washing machine. I think you can probably even use them to help find your glasses if you put them down in the room somewhere, if you walk around the room slowly. So there's lots of uses for it, and it's just a really nice way of connecting people. And the best thing for me is that you speak to a human rather than the actual technology itself, so it's much more natural. So give Be My Eyes a go, and hopefully it will help you do things that you are struggling to do at the moment without any sighted support. And I'll be back soon with another app for you to try. Take care and stay safe.
Hi, listeners, and welcome to this week's review of a talking book with me, Steve Terry. So this week, I've chosen to review an all-time literary classic, fun for all the family, Treasure Island. Peg-leg pirates, colourful parrots, plundered riches, they're all in Robert Louis Stevenson's 1883 original seafaring adventure. When young Jim Hawkins decides to follow a map to buried treasure, he must befriend or outsmart memorable characters such as pirate Long John Silver, Captain Billy Bones, and island man Ben Gunn. Mutinous plans, mysterious deaths, and a tangle of double crosses keeps Jim guessing all the way to the prize. Actually inspired by real-life seafarers, Robert Louis Stevenson really does capture the adventurous spirit of the times and the imagination of readers, young and old alike. No one can fail to be captivated by the swashbuckling piracy of Treasure Island. The struggle of young Jim and his friends as they do battle on the high seas is thrillingly played out in a number of available audio books, some of which are recorded with full cast dramatisation and include all-star casts and household names. I do hope you enjoy this week's recommended talking book. And again, as always, if you'd like to make a suggestion for a review, email them over to Beacon or get in touch on 01902 880111. Let us know what you'd like us to be looking at in the future, and I'd be happy to take a listen and provide a review in the future. That's all for now, folks. Take care, stay safe, enjoy the book, and arr!
In this week's flashback section, we go back to the 14th of April 1970, when a critical explosion occurred on board Apollo 13, and we first heard the words, "Houston, we've had a problem." The explosion caused one of the most critical situations in American space history, putting the lives of the three astronauts on board in severe jeopardy. The explosion happened in the fuel cells of the spacecraft service module approximately 56 hours after liftoff. This resulted in the loss of Apollo 13's main power supply, which meant oxygen and water reserves were critically low. The safety of the three astronauts, Captain James Lovell, Jack Swigert, and Fred Howes, was uncertain, with NASA hoping emergency contingency plans would help their safe return. The crew survived on emergency battery power of the lunar module Aquarius. The spacecraft's main computer was switched off to conserve the little power remaining. The mission was to have been man's third moon landing. Apollo 13 successfully returned to Earth on Friday, the 17th of April, 1970. The spacecraft entered the atmosphere at 400,000 feet above the Earth and hurtled towards Earth at 25,000 miles per hour. The command capsule splashed down in the Pacific Ocean at 1907 BST. The lunar module and the service module had been jettisoned before re-entry into the Earth's atmosphere. Within 3 minutes of the capsule landing, helicopters were on the scene. The three astronauts were airlifted onto the rescue boat, where they spent the night before being reunited with their families. Also on this week in history, on April the 13th in 1949, the Nuremberg trials ended in Germany. On April the 13th in 1992, Neil Kinnock resigned as leader of the Labour Party. On April the 14th in 1906 in Italy, Mount Vesuvius erupted, and that eruption lasted for 7 days. On April the 15th in 1912, the Titanic sunk. The RMS Titanic struck an iceberg just before midnight on the 14th of April. The ship, with 2,200 passengers and crew on board, on its maiden voyage was thought to be unsinkable, but it sank after 2.5 hours when the ship broke up in the Atlantic Ocean. And that was in the early hours of April the 15th in 1912. On April the 16th in 1964, at the Old Bailey in London, the Great Train Robbers were sentenced to up to 30 years in prison for their part in the Great Train Robbery. Also on April the 16th in 1964, the Rolling Stones released their debut album. On April the 17th in 1970, Apollo 13 safely returned to Earth, landing in the Pacific Ocean. On April the 18th in 1956, Grace Kelly married Prince Reynard of Monaco. Also on April the 18th in 1956, premium bonds were introduced. The British Chancellor Harold Macmillan unveiled plans for a new state savings scheme, offering cash prizes of up to £1,000 instead of paying interest. And finally, on April the 19th in 1987, it was the first ever episode of The Simpsons.
Thanks, Pete. If you missed any of the years for this week's quiz, the answers are coming up in our And Finally section very shortly. So what does the weather have in store for us this weekend and for next week? Here's Mina.
Here are the sunrise and sunset times and weather report for the coming week. Sunrise, 6:03 a.m. Sunset, 20:14 p.m. Weather report. Friday, 17th of April, light rain and a moderate breeze with a maximum temperature of 17 degrees. Saturday, 18th of April, light rain and a gentle breeze with a maximum temperature of 12 degrees. Sunday, 19th of April, light cloud and a gentle breeze with a maximum temperature of 14 degrees. Monday, 20th of April, sunny intervals and a moderate breeze with a maximum temperature of 14 degrees. Tuesday, 21st of April, sunny intervals and a moderate breeze with a maximum temperature of 13 degrees. Wednesday, 22nd of April, sunny intervals and a moderate breeze with a maximum temperature of 14 degrees. Thursday, 23rd of April, sunny intervals and a gentle breeze with a maximum temperature of 14 degrees.
And finally, the answers to our quiz set earlier in this week's Talking News on events that happened this week in history. Question 1. What year was the famous Apollo 13 mission when we first heard the words, "Houston, we've had a problem"? The answer, April the 14th, 1970. Question 2. In what year did Neil Kinnock resign as leader of the Labour Party? The answer, April the 13th, 1992. Question 3. In what year did the Titanic sink? It was April the 15th, 1912. Question 4. In what year did the Rolling Stones release their debut album? The answer was April the 16th, 1964. Question 5. What year did Grace Kelly marry Prince Reynier of Monaco? The answer was April the 18th, 1956. And finally, question 6. In what year was the first ever episode of The Simpsons? The answer was April 19th, 1987. If you are living with sight loss and have your own sight loss tips to share with others, we would love to feature them on the Talking News. So please get in touch. Contact details to follow. The Black Country Talking News is now available on your mobile through British Wireless for the Blind mobile app. The impact of coronavirus is having a devastating impact on us as a charity, with fundraising activities being postponed, our charity shops closed, and other income streams affected. If you are able to fundraise for Beacon, please stay on or visit our website at beaconvision.org for ways you can help. Thank you.
So that's it for another edition of Black Country Talking News. If you'd like to contact us, you can do so by calling us on 01902 880111, emailing us at bctn@beaconvision.org, or send a letter to Black Country Talking News, Beacon Centre, Wolverhampton Road East, Wolverhampton, WV4 6AZ. Thank you for listening to Black Country Talking News, and to all our supporters, donators and volunteers. Without their support, we would be unable to run this free service. So it's goodbye from all of us, and please note the information and views expressed in this recording does not necessarily represent the views of Beacon or Talking News. Mentions of goods or services does not imply endorsement, and whilst every care is taken to supply accurate information, Beacon and Talking News do not undertake liability for any errors.